Welcome to Monday's edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live here on Giants.com. He is Paul Dottino. I'm Lance Beto. Good to be with you for the next 60 minutes. Two ways to interact with us here on the program, 201-939-4513. That is the telephone number, hashtag Giants Chat. We'll get to your calls. We'll get to your tweets in a little bit. Judy Batista of NFL Network will be joining us shortly as we get you set and start previewing free agency. The new league year will start on Wednesday. We have finally arrived. We'll have official word on specific transactions, but now over the next few hours, Paul, you're at least able to talk to potential free agents and set the parameters of any potential deals.
Yeah, exactly. Now, remember, there's a difference between street free agents and guys whose contract is running out at the end of the calendar year. Street free agents like DeMarco Murray, like Dominic Rogers-Cromartie, those guys, because their contracts were terminated ahead of schedule, they can turn around and talk to somebody and sign on a dotted line within seconds. They don't have to wait for Wednesday to officially join a new club. So in case there's any confusion there, it does depend on whether or not a guy was terminated and is a street free agent, that's what they call them, or his contract expired at the end of the calendar year, the NFL's calendar,
which is
year,
4 p.m. Eastern on Wednesday.
Yeah. Just so you understand the difference.
That's why you've seen even some free agents already get signed, because
correct,
if they were let go a few weeks ago, then obviously they have the opportunity. For example, a guy like Chris Baker, who was
yes,
let go from the Tampa Bay Buccaneers and then has since signed with the Cincinnati Bengals.
All right, Richard Sherman's another one.
He's another perfect example. Seahawks let go of him, and now he is a San Francisco 49er. So a lot happening across the NFL landscape, and to provide more insight, we are now joined by Judy Batista, who covers the league for the NFL Network. Judy, Lance Beto, Paul Dottino with you on Giants.com. Big Blue Kickoff Live. Appreciate the time. How's everything?
Good. How are you guys doing?
Hi, Judy. How's everything?
Doing very well. Well, there is plenty of activity that we're going to start hearing about. I'm sure you're hearing about some of the chatter as well. But
I can't believe she took our phone call.
I know, exactly.
Last week was nuts. Last week was like, holy cow, is there going to be anything left for Wednesday? But there will be, that's for sure.
Well, Judy, has the Cleveland Browns made another trade that you know of? I don't want to miss anything if I blink here.
Somebody must have taken the phone away from John Dorsey. He was on fire late last week. That was crazy. I'm fascinated by the number of trades that we're seeing now, because as you guys well know, like, that was not something even only a few years ago that you saw much of in the NFL.
Mm-hmm.
And now we're just seeing this avalanche of trades before free agency even opens.
Why do you think that is, Judy? Because we were always taught, once they put that salary cap in years ago, that, oh, it's going to be very, very difficult to do deals because of these contracts, and guys don't want to take on these contracts, and they got to worry about then cutting other players. It's just too messy, too sticky. No one's going to bother with making trades. And it was that way forever until now.
Right.
What changed?
I think, well, when you ask people about it, which I did just because I'm sort of interested in what's happening, there's a whole bunch of theories. One is that the salary cap has exploded so much, there is so much money available, that it is not as restrictive as it used to be. So it's not as hard to get the deals in. That's number one. Also, players have shorter-term contracts. So, again, it's not as hard to work them under the cap because there's not all that extra money that would be dead money at the end of long-term contracts. Other things are, like, I saw this in Sam Farmer, actually, from the LA Times, wrote a story that mentioned this about the trades. And Les Snead from the Rams, who is a guy who loves to trade,
mm-hmm,
said he thinks Les Snead's theory is that the ability to text other GMs has made it easier to do trades. It's just so much faster and more efficient for GMs to text each other and maybe to send out a quick text to, like, you know, 10 other GMs, like, hey, what do you think about this? That it just facilitates it. So I think it's a combination of all of that. I sort of laughed at the texting thing, but I think there's probably some merit into it. I was like, really? Texting changed the NFL? But I think there's probably some merit in all of those things. But
I will say this.
And I think it's the way to go.
You know what, Judy? It is a lot easier to keep a poker face if you're texting.
That's true, right? They can hear your tone of voice. The other thing is, you guys know this. I mean, it's a copycat league. The Patriots have been successful at trading. The Eagles most recently have been very successful with trades. So you know that puts the idea into other GM's heads.
Well, and Judy, related to that subject, the one trend that I've noticed is also I see a lot of teams capitalizing on value. For example, I mean, when the Broncos shipped out Aqib Talib, and then you see the Rams only sacrifice a fifth-round pick, which is a late rounder, and you're unlikely with a fifth-round pick, Judy, to get a five-time Pro Bowl corner in terms of talent, and then you see Jarvis Landry get traded for a mid-round pick and a seventh rounder. I mean, how much do you think that factors into the decision-making of these executives to say, why roll the dice with these late-round draft picks when I could bring in a guy that has a proven track record and he can at least contribute immediately?
I think there's that, and then I think on the other side of the ledger is I think there's a feeling of it's better for they don't seem as intent on one side trying to win the trade. You know, I mean, we in our business are always interested in, like, who won the trade? Well, I think the GMs now realize there's a way for both sides to win the trade. Like, you know, they needed a cornerback. Aqib Talib can still play. The Broncos wanted to get something in return for him. It's better to get something than nothing. So it worked for both sides, and I think you're seeing more of that, too. GMs realizing one team doesn't have to fleece the other team. You can both come out okay.
Yeah, it's funny you mentioned that, Judy. I remember George Young told me many years ago back in the 80s, that's actually the best trade, when both teams win, because this way other teams won't be afraid to talk to you down the line. Because if you rob somebody on a trade, they're really not too eager to talk to you again, and nor are other teams, because they think, oh, they robbed them, they're going to rob me.
Right, and don't forget, I mean, everybody gossips in this league, so they all know, like, if a deal went sour or if it was very, very difficult to negotiate a contract or a deal, they all know that. So I agree with you. I think you want to keep all those channels open, and you want to keep it so that other teams want to do deals with you.
Talking with Judy Batista, covers the NFL for the NFL Network. So since we are on the brink of the start of free agency, this is an extremely unique period to me, Judy, because of how many veteran quarterbacks are set to hit the market.
Yeah.
And it's not just Kirk Cousins. The three Vikings quarterbacks, Case Keenum, Sam Bradford, Teddy Bridgewater, there's a lot of options for teams if they want to go the route of proven commodity versus perhaps somebody in this draft class. How do you think this quarterback market is going to impact the team's decision-making moving forward with this year's draft class?
Well, I think for a few teams, it's going to alter things dramatically, right? I mean, if you are all in on Kirk Cousins and you don't get him, you've got to have some kind of plan B, presumably. So you're either going plan B, you know, sort of Case Keenum, that route, or if you like what you've seen so far in any of the quarterbacks in this class, maybe you switch to that. You know, only one team's going to get Kirk Cousins. That's the domino that I think everybody is waiting to see where it falls, because it will affect so much of, you know, there's that top handful of teams at the top of the draft. So many of them need a quarterback. You know, we saw Cleveland, who got Tyrod Taylor. This is no disrespect to Tyrod Taylor, but he's a bridge quarterback, right? I mean, he is presumably not the guy they think they're going to go forward with for the next 10, 12 years. He's a bridge quarterback, so that doesn't necessarily take Cleveland out of the running to draft a quarterback. So if you think they're going to draft, well, who further down is going to try to get Kirk Cousins or one of these veteran quarterbacks? Maybe the Denver Broncos. We know that they're probably going to be in on Cousins. Can they get him? If they don't get him, what happens? What happens if the Jets don't get him? We know the Jets are probably going to be in on him. If they don't get him, what do they do? Do they turn to the draft, or do they like what they see in a Case Keenum or a Sam Bradford or somebody like that? The Cousins thing is going to be the domino. And there's so much that's interesting about his situation because, again, as you guys know, we don't see quarterbacks like this come on the market. Peyton Manning came on the market much later in his career and coming off a very serious injury. This guy is healthy and not 30 years old yet. That's amazing. And now there are reports, Ian Rappaport reported this morning, that there are at least two teams that are looking at giving him a fully guaranteed contract, which doesn't happen in the NFL the way it does in the NBA and Major League Baseball. So that would be altering for the entire NFL the way teams approach, you know, franchise quarterbacks. There wouldn't be too many players who get to free agency who would be able to command a fully guaranteed contract. But that would certainly be an interesting wrinkle if he gets it. And it would be a really interesting wrinkle for places like Green Bay, which has to be looking at Aaron Rodgers' next deal, or Atlanta, which has to be looking at Matt Ryan's deal.
You know, there's a fly buzzing around the picnic table, Judy, and I don't think any of us thought we would get to this date on the calendar, still saying that Drew Brees and the Saints had not done a deal.
Yeah.
What are the chances that Brees and the Saints don't come to terms, and all of a sudden his name vaults to the top of the quarterback list?
Well, look, I think we all think he's going to end up in New Orleans. I don't have any reason to doubt that. I think Tom Condon, who is his agent, is playing this really well because everybody knows he wants to be back in New Orleans. Obviously, the Saints want him. So you got to create a little leverage in a negotiation. Let him get to, you know, let him get to the period where he can start talking to other teams. You know, that'll create some urgency for the New Orleans Saints. It's hard for me to imagine that he actually goes elsewhere, but wouldn't it be interesting if, like, John Elway took a swing at getting Drew Brees in Denver?
You could see it happening. After all, he's in the same senior citizen class that Peyton Manning was, and we saw what Peyton did for the Broncos. I mean, I don't think that that's totally far-fetched, to be honest with you.
It would be so interesting. Look, I mean, I actually think Drew Brees would be less of a risk than Peyton Manning was because, again, Peyton was coming off the big injury, and you didn't quite know at that point when they signed him what he could be again. It would be fascinating if John Elway placed a call and said, hey, you know, what about us? I think we would all be stunned if he doesn't end up in New Orleans. So.
I tend to agree with you, but could you imagine if the Vikings lost out on Cousins, where a lot of people think he's going to land? What if the Vikings all of a sudden swooped in and grabbed Drew Brees? You're going to tell me that wouldn't help them?
Well, it's another domino, as Judy mentioned, being thrown into the mix.
Yeah, that would be, well, I mean, that would shake up the entire NFL because that makes them the immediate Super Bowl favorite.
And a player that nobody expected to hit the market. Paul just brought up Kirk Cousins to the Vikings, and Judy, I'm in favor of that. I mean, I think it makes too much sense because while, as you mentioned, listen, giving a quarterback, even a quarterback, and it's so important, a fully guaranteed contract is a huge risk because if he gets hurt, you know, what are you left with? Minnesota, to me, has its house in order. And what I mean by that, Judy, they've got a good defense, and a lot of those players are still under contract through 2022, 2023, like the Harrison Smiths of the world. And the Everson Griffins. They got Dalvin Cook, a rookie running back. I know he's coming off an injury. The offensive line they rebuilt last season. It seems as if they bring in an established quarterback. You know, who's to say that they can't get back to the NFC Championship game? How realistic do you think it is that the Vikings say, hey, you know what? We had three guys, but Kirk is an upgrade, and it makes sense to invest in somebody like that?
Well, look, I mean, they've let the other three guys essentially walk. You know, I mean, maybe they ultimately, if they miss out on Kirk Cousins, maybe they bring one of them back, but they've basically let the other three guys go to free agency. So they're clearly going for Kirk Cousins. I think the only, and I agree with you, that to me is the best destination for him. I think the only question you have is there a team like the Jets, which have an enormous amount of money available right now, that could offer so much more money than anybody else that you get to turn his head and say, well, what about the New York Jets? And I think that goes to what's in Kirk Cousins' head. And, you know, we don't know that yet, which is, you know, he's made a ton of money being franchise tagged the last 2 years, and good for him, and he has played it perfectly. Is getting the last dollar right now the most important thing to him, or is it getting a whole lot of money but also being on a team that's in the best position to win?
Yeah.
Which is the most important? Because I don't think you could ever argue, even if the Jets have the most money, I don't think you could argue that gives them the best chance to win right now. It doesn't. But the Vikings sure do. Mm-hmm. So could the Vikings get close enough to offering as much as the Jets could to you know, solidify their deal? I think the Vikings are the most logical destination for where he's going to land. I'm also interested in the fact that he wants to take visits, which, as you guys know, is not something we see for the top few free agents. Usually when free agency opens, the deals are done, you know, within a matter of minutes.
Yeah.
Nobody takes visits anymore. He says he wants to take visits.
Well, you know, Judy, I would say this, that the two kind of off-the-board triggers that teams could use to woo these guys, and they're certainly new and unique and will take ripple effects throughout the league is the fully guaranteed deal, which you've already alluded to. The other one is a percentage of salary cap escalator clause, which is what the Yankees and George Steinbrenner used in baseball to get Dave Winfield from the Padres years ago. And I mean, these would be two triggers that were two exceptions to the rule that people have not done before. But you are absolutely right when you say that the NFL's landscape would be changed dramatically if they start handing out those kinds of deals.
Yeah, because that is something that NFL players have complained about, you know, and rightly so, for years. That when you see the, you know, the contract figures in Major League Baseball and the NBA and their fully guaranteed contracts, right, you know, football players always complained about that. The argument among executives was, well, you know, the injury risk is so much greater in the NFL that you can't do guaranteed contracts. Well, if Kirk Cousins does, I'm just spitballing numbers here, like a three-year fully guaranteed contract, which, first of all, is only 3 years, which would mean he would hit free agency again in his early 30s.
Yeah.
So he would get another big bite of the pie in only 3 years. Fully guaranteed, that changes everything. Then Aaron Rodgers' agent goes to Green Bay and says, Kirk Cousins just got a fully guaranteed contract. I've got Aaron Rodgers over here. What are you going to do for him? Right? It changes everything in terms of what agents can go for. Again, there's only a handful of players who would have that kind of leverage, right, to say, I want a fully guaranteed contract. They're almost always going to be franchise-level quarterbacks, proven franchise-level quarterbacks. But it would be a fascinating change, and widely applauded, I would think, by his fellow players.
Judy, final one for me. I know you're limited on time. The Giants, they clearly are going to have to do things in the draft and free agency if Dave Gettleman's going to turn things around this fall. In your mind, who are the most likely free agents who might land with Big Blue? I know there's been a lot of talk in the papers about Norwell, the guard who will command a great deal of money. Is he, in your mind, their number one target?
I would think so. I mean, they've played it pretty close to the vest, I think. But, yeah, I would think he's got to be the number one target just because he sort of fits so well, right? There's the prior relationship there. It's obviously, you know, the offensive line is clearly a position of need for this team. So that would seem to be the obvious first thing they go for. But look, I mean, they just got rid of DRC, so are they going to be in the veteran cornerback market now? Are they comfortable where they are? You know, look, there's plenty of holes on this roster to fill. You know, I think they go for Norwell first just because it's an obvious position of need and it's sort of a no-brainer that, you know, Gettleman's got some familiarity there.
Talking with Judy Batiste, who covers the NFL for the NFL Network. Judy, before we let you go, also related to the Giants, I mean, Justin Pugh is probably one of their most notable free agents. And like Norwell, right, I'm sure he's going to receive a great deal of interest on the open market. If you go back to last offseason, Judy, it seems as if every single year, which is not a surprise, the money being thrown at offensive linemen continues to increase. And now with the cap going up, it wouldn't surprise me. And with a lot of college offensive linemen not running pro-style offenses, most teams seem to put more value in the proven commodity than rolling the dice with the unknown commodity. What type of a market do you see playing out, not just for Justin Pugh, but for offensive linemen that are set to hit the market this year?
I think it's going to be a really good market because I don't think there's many top tier of them. I mean, if you look, Nate Solder, Patriots tackle, he's a free agent. Now, certainly the Patriots want him back. If he gives an indication that there's going to be a robust market for him, because there's just not that many top-tier offensive linemen, and you just made the point. You hear from so many NFL coaches how difficult it is to get offensive linemen from college and get them ready for NFL ball. I've had offensive line coaches in the NFL tell me they literally have to teach run blocking to guys that come in from college because they just don't do it as much in college as they need to do to get ready for the NFL. So they have to go down to, you know, go all the way back to basics, how to run block. So, yes, if you're a proven veteran offensive lineman available in free agency, there's going to be a really nice market for you.
Thank you, CBA.
Yes, good for the players. It's all good for the players.
Absolutely. Well, Judy Batista, kind enough to give us a few minutes here from the NFL Network. Judy, we don't want to use up all your minutes for the month, so we'll let you get back to the news and notes that I'm sure you're collecting across the league. Always appreciate the time and the insight that you give us. Thanks so much.
Thanks, Judy.
My pleasure, guys. Take care.
Absolutely. Judy Batista, once again, covers the NFL for the NFL Network, and I'm sure we're going to start to hear of the news that is coming from all of these potential meetings with free agencies, but it will certainly present a very unique market, as I mentioned, Paul, and it's not just because we're seeing some names at a variety of different positions, but I can't remember a market like this for the quarterback position.
No,
I can't, and I think that's going to impact other positions and how teams go after those positions, because if you invest a lot of money in Kirk Cousins or you invest a lot of money in Case Keenum or Bradford, you know, that's going to take away your flexibility elsewhere.
Well, let's just say, for argument's sake, and I presented the scenario before, let's say the Vikings do get Cousins, okay? If you're John Elway, you got to be trying to pry Breeze away from the Saints. You have to. You have to.
Or maybe making a trade for somebody that's already under contract, too, could be a route that he takes.
Potentially. Yeah. And, you know, what's going to happen between now and April 26th? Because April 26th is going to be here before you know it. And I guarantee you, folks, there are going to be one, two, three, four. There are going to be a handful of things that happen in the next several weeks that will shuffle and cause chaos in what's going to happen in the first round of that draft. I guarantee it. I mean, already we've seen in the last week so many unexpected things happen. If you're not expecting the unexpected right now, you're sleeping.
Well, who would have thought that John Dorsey of the Cleveland Browns would have made so many trades? He revamped the roster in the span of, what, 4 or 5 hours?
Yeah.
In which he got a quarterback. He got Jarvis Landry, who was given the franchise tag from the Dolphins. He also shipped out Danny Shelton to the New England Patriots on Saturday for a conditional pick. And then Demarius Randall he gets from Green Bay. They ship DeShone Kizer to Green Bay, and then they flip their fourth and their fifth round picks. I mean, my head is exploding from just going over all of that.
Yeah, but you ain't seen nothing yet. Tomorrow he's going to bring Jim Brown out of retirement.
Oh, really? Well, that's good to know. He's going to revisit the old school philosophy and try to bring back the winning tradition of football in Cleveland, which has not been there for quite some time. 201-939-4513 is the telephone number. Hashtag Giants Chat. We're going to open up the phone lines here in a second, but before we do that, there was some Giants news that occurred over the weekend, and the Giants terminated the contracts of two notable players, one punter Brad Wing, secondly corner Dominique Rodgers-Cromartie, DRC. Let's start with DRC. Now, you know, we've talked about DRC in years past, Paul, and normally we've talked about how every time he's not in the lineup or every time he got hurt in the middle of a game, what was the big conversation? Well, you know, the Giants didn't have another corner that could come in and fill the void, or opposing quarterbacks would go after the player that filled in for DRC. Case in point, the playoff game against Green Bay. Aaron Rodgers saw him go out, and then he started attacking the slot, who was the replacement corner. So, you know, this is a player that had meant a whole lot to the secondary over the last few years, and sometimes I feel as if he did not receive enough credit because he had been in and out of the lineup because of some of the injuries that he had to deal with.
Well, 2 years ago in that playoff season, he was second team All-NFL, so I think he did get the credit he deserved that season, but I think he's a very productive player. Clearly, with whatever they had planned for him, according to what DRC said on his Instagram account, you know, goodbye, and then the Giants did officially announce his termination. Whatever it was that they could not agree on or come to terms with that resulted in this final result, so to speak, it's a shame because he's a good player. I think he's got a lot to offer somebody. I don't think he'll be on the street very long. I don't know what number he's going to come in at. He'll probably be told that he's going to play the boundary corner again, which is something he was most comfortable doing. Not that he couldn't play the other spots, because he could.
He's got the versatility.
But boundary corners tend also to make the most money. And I'm just going to take a wild guess that that may also be part of his trepidation in not wanting to convert to other spots and play other positions. Being a boundary corner and being a good one can make you a very happy man. so to speak.
Yes, from a financial standpoint.
So I'm thankful that I got to see him as long as I did. 4 years here with the Giants. He was a pleasure to watch. He was a fun guy to talk to. Certainly had a lot of personality and character. It is what it is. Brad Wing, on the other hand, had a very, very struggling subpar season in 2017. I don't think anybody would dispute that. A number of times in the clutch, he wound up coming up real small with a shank that, you know, put them in really bad straits. And then the defense could not hold up after being put in such a bad position, especially at the end of games. But I don't want to make him the scapegoat. There were a lot of things that went wrong. That's what happens when you win only three games during the course of the season. However, the promise that he showed previously really did not come to fruition last season. He seemed to really go backwards.
Well, especially in big spots when the Giants had an opportunity to close out games or change field position. For example, the Philadelphia game. In Philadelphia, bad punt, changes field position, game-winning field goal.
How about Tampa
Bay? That was the other game.
And those two games,
field goal.
To me, those two games, those last second field goal losses, that's where it all went bad for this team. That's when the iceberg hit the Titanic. Right there. That's when it all happened and went all downhill. The team started taking on water with those back-to-back losses. His kicks were major contributors to those downfalls. But again, we're not going to point fingers just at one guy because there were other folks on the field, too, who didn't do their job properly. But it's a lot easier to terminate or part ways with a punter. Certainly lower salary than maybe some other guys at other positions.
Yep.
And so they've made the decision to do so. So now what we do know is that they have a young fella on the team by way of Idaho, where he had a 44-plus average yards per punt average in Austin Rico. Now, I don't know that he's going to be the punter this year, but he's certainly going to be given a chance to compete for the job over the summer. He was in Bill's camp a little bit a year ago. Giants signed him to a futures contract. His college stats say that the guy can kick. But, again, under the pressure of the pro game, when it's your livelihood now and it's not just something you're going to college to do, we'll see. There are always punters out there, dime a dozen guys, who you can bring in to compete with the guy that you have. So undoubtedly they will bring in somebody. But maybe this guy's the answer. I don't know.
No, Jeff can always dust off the shoes if he wants.
No, he's done with that.
I don't know about that. You know, I think Fiegels may have at least one more punt in him. I think if they needed an emergency.
Well,
maybe
a couple of more shows with Schmelk and he'll go back to punting.
He may do that. I like your thought process. See, we're in agreement on that one. But in all seriousness, they do have Rico, who they signed in January. And what's intriguing about his background is he was a kicker and a punter.
Right, but he would only be a punter here.
Correct. No, he would only be a punter. I'm not trying to insinuate that they would use him as a place kicker, but he's got experience in both situations, which goes to your point about the strength of his leg.
Mm-hmm.
So that, I think, says a lot. And remember, Oldrick Rosas was a young guy. They gave a chance. He ultimately won the job. That doesn't mean, though, that Rico is in line to now all of a sudden walk through the door and have the job solidified. But the larger point that I wanted to make also, Paul, with respect to...
They do have another kicker coming into camp, though, too.
In terms of competition.
In terms of competition for Rosas. And his name escapes me right now. I'll have to take a quick look. So don't look at Rico in terms of... It's Marshall Cohn from Iowa, 25 years old. He will be the competition, at least in the springtime, for Rosas, not Rico.
No, not Rico. And
I just wanted to make that clear.
And I was not making it seem as if he was going to be in competition as a field goal kicker. I just said that his background shows his versatility and the strength of his leg. But the larger point that I wanted to bring up with respect to Brad Wing and DRC having their contracts terminated is when Dave Gettleman came in, Paul, he had no ties to any of these players other than JPP in terms of an established relationship. So
right.
It shouldn't surprise anybody that Gettleman is coming in, he's putting his stamp on this team, and you know he's not looking at contracts, he's not looking at players and saying, well, because of this contract, I need to keep this guy. this a clean slate, as Pat Shurmur and Gettleman had said during their press conferences, but also Gettleman has his own mindset, and he knows what he wants in players that he feels are going to help be brought in to present the identity of this team. And that's why it doesn't surprise me that, you know, some notable names have already parted ways with the team.
Well, I think Dave Gettleman made it very clear he is a tape junkie. And if you're to assume anything, that is, he's looking at that stuff and the tape doesn't lie, and he will believe what he sees, and he's going to make judgments strictly on what the video tells his eyes.
Absolutely. And it'll be interesting to see if DRC winds up with another team, how quickly that happens or how long he has to wait, depending on what the cornerback market is. But I do think DRC still has value in this league, and I think
sure.
A team that grabs him and he is open to playing a variety of spots or the outside is going to get certainly a proven commodity. And, you know, a side note to that, this is another reason why on this program that we shy away from looking at reports and speculation and running with it as fact, because here's an example, Paul. A few weeks ago, there were a lot of reports out there, DRC's moving to safety and presented it as if he has solidified a role, he's going to be here for the future. And a few weeks later, then the Giants ultimately terminate his contract. So I just wanted to point that out. We're not doing that just because we want to avoid topics on this program. We're doing it because here's another example of a report that did not have a great deal of substance behind it, and then the complete opposite occurred a few weeks later.
And quite honestly, sometimes, even if the report does, things change over time.
Exactly.
They're very
yeah.
fluid. And as we saw with head coaching reports, you know, yeah. Some are just fake news. Others are just fluid. And there are too many twists and turns that can happen before things are actually solidified and concrete. So, yeah, it just, I don't know. I don't like talking about a lot of things that I don't know to be in concrete. It's just not fun. It's wasting time and energy.
Absolutely. All right, let's open up the lines. 201-939-4513, hashtag Giants Chat. Everything up for debate as we inch closer to the start of the new league year, Wednesday, 4 p.m. Eastern. Christian is in New York. Christian gets us going. What's happening, Christian?
Hey, guys.
Hi.
So here's this situation I've been thinking about. The Browns go quarterback at one. Saquon Barkley's on the board, but I'm having trouble finding much of him running between the tackles in college. It doesn't seem like he even did a lot of it. And I'm almost wondering if he's not really necessarily seasoned for that. And I know he's 230 pounds, but I'd like to think that it takes some reps with, you know, lowering your shoulder and driving your legs for extra yardage. And it just seems like he was so much more athletic than everyone that he was able to run around them instead of ever having to run through them, because, you know, that is obviously more desired. You're probably going to get more yards. You're not going to slow down as much. So why wouldn't you bounce everything if you can? But I'm worried that he might actually be like basically an oversized third down back in a way, where he's just not, like, maybe because we don't really know how natural of a runner he is between the tackles right now. And I'm not saying that he definitely won't be a great running back, because he will. But if there's a chance he's not that good at running between the tackles, I wouldn't even consider him at two. And it's just hard to know that right now.
Well, first of all, you still have Wayne Goleman and Paul Perkins on the roster, so nobody's saying that even if you did make that selection, and once again, we have no idea if he's even going to be still on the board at number two, depending on what Cleveland does. Nobody's saying that he has to have that defined role that you're pointing to, Christian, because I think Wayne Goleman and Paul Perkins, you can utilize them in ways that you don't utilize Saquon Barkley. You're right, his athleticism did wonders for him at Penn State. I'm not going to disagree with you there, but I don't envision Saquon Barkley, whatever team he goes to, Paul, I don't envision him as a 20-carry-a-game type of running back. I think they're going to utilize him on special teams. I think they're going to utilize him as a receiver. And I think they're going to utilize him as a runner, which means when you combine all of that, he'll probably get 20 to 25 touches. But 20 to 25 touches is not 20 to 25 carries and him running between the tackles.
Right, right.
Those are two different things.
He's not going to pound it up in there like Ezekiel Elliott. That's just not his game. That does not mean he is not worth the pick. It just
yeah.
means that when you go to the supermarket, you want to buy an apple, and maybe Lance wants to buy an orange. It's a different style. Nonetheless, the guy can be effective, and he's, quite frankly, a game breaker.
Yeah, I mean, he's definitely going to be awesome no matter what. I'm just wondering if it could possibly get to the point where teams kind of know that he's just not going to impose his will between the tackles on you, and so you almost start to defend him differently. And if they do that, I just don't see how he could be worth the number two pick if you're not playing him totally honestly.
I understand that, but let's put it this way. If you improve your offensive line to the point where they can block inside and they can block outside, well, now you got a whole different dynamic, don't you? Because maybe Barkley will then have the opportunity to pick and choose the hole that he wants and scare defenses, because maybe, just maybe, your guard, your center, will be able to plow with a trap some holes for him, and then he'll start gashing people up the middle. I mean, that's entirely possible. But your offensive line, this is why I keep telling people, Barkley be a great pick for the Giants, and there's logic behind it, but you better get this offensive line squared away first. Because if you don't, then you are not maximizing Barkley's value and potential.
Yeah, and I did call about this, saying that Gallman and Perkins really wouldn't be enough of a 1-2, only because our line is kind of the below-average area where you don't need a fantastic line for a great running back, but it's still got to be pretty good.
Got to be good enough. Got to be good enough. And right now, the Giants still have a ways to go.
Yeah, because we don't know what the offensive line is going to look like
we
in 2018.
Thank
so
you.
We're operating under information that's not wholesome at this point, Christian, and appreciate the phone call. And if the dynamics and the personnel of the offensive line change, you know, then I think maybe your viewpoint of the Gallman-Perkins 1-2 punch changes, because maybe you don't necessarily need somebody that could dance around and make nothing out of something, or something out of nothing,
exactly.
I should say. So, yes, we'll
we've
reverse
seen
that
too
real
much
quick.
Of the other side.
Correct. That's why I caught myself before I was going to finish that one. But that how the offensive line plays itself out, I think really will change perhaps the outlook of other positions. So you really have to know that first before you move forward. Matt is on Rhode Island. Matt, what's happening?
Hey, guys.
Hi.
How you doing, Matt?
Doing well. Thanks for taking my call. First, I'm going to give you my free agency prediction. The Giants are going to sign Norwell almost immediately on Wednesday. Everything I've read from, you know, guys like Lock and Four and whatnot, it seems like that's where that's headed. They're going to sign Demario Davis from the Jets. They're going to sign Jerick McKinnon to come in and play running back for them, and kind of like their new Marine. And they'll also walk away with Chris Hubbard from the Steelers.
Okay, so you're going to mortgage your house to get them money to do all of this, right?
Well, I don't think Davis will come that expensive, nor will McKinnon. Hubbard only has 10 starts under his belt. I think those three guys won't be huge, nor will be the one big fish.
See, I will tell you this. I have thought myself that Hubbard should be one of the Giants' premier targets, but I have refrained from talking about him because my understanding is the Pittsburgh Steelers absolutely adore this guy. They absolutely love him. And that they are not going to let him walk out the door. So I kind of wiped him off of my chalkboard.
Okay. We'll see. We'll see. You know, these are just guesses. Don't hold me to it. The last thing I'm going to say, guys, I don't know how much you can talk about it, but I'm sick of Odell Beckham and the constant distractions that he brings. They can lose without him. And they've been losing since he's got here. It's a bad cultural vibe that he brings to this team. This franchise used to stand for something positive. He does not stand for anything positive. I'm going to leave on that. I don't know if you guys can talk about it, but I know what a blunt looks like, and that was a blunt in that guy's hand in that video. Thanks, guys.
I appreciate the phone call, Matt. The Giants came out and made a statement saying that they are aware of it, but they have no further comment in terms of what the last caller was alluding to. This is a topic that is much larger, and we don't necessarily need to focus on Odell Beckham, Paul, but I'm curious your thoughts, because this is brought up a lot with Baker Mayfield, and personally it irritates me. I think way too much is made of the attitude of an individual, and sometimes it's mixed up when passion and emotion translate into a bad attitude. When it's more of just the sport is an emotional game, and sometimes people express that emotion differently than others, and that shouldn't be misinterpreted as a bad attitude, a bad teammate, and somebody that is impacting the team. So when I look at players and their very energetic on the sideline and emotional, I don't think that's necessarily bad for the culture of the team or synonymous with a bad attitude.
I think I take it on a case-by-case basis. I don't broad brush any of that. Phil Simms was as animated and as emotional on the field and on the sideline and on the bench as any Giants player was. But I never thought Phil Simms was a negative. You know, to me, it's a case-by-case thing. I don't think you can just say guys who are that fiery and that over-the-top emotionally are bad for a team, and I don't think you can say that they're good for a team. I think energy, focus, intensity, work ethic, 7 days a week.
Of course, yeah.
Is critical. And if
much
a,
more
if,
so.
If a guy, yes, and if a guy is going to be a little bit out of bounds with his emotions and his actions on game day and hasn't shown me all of the work during the course of the week, I'm going to have less tolerance for it. But if he does everything that he's supposed to do, every practice, and does everything he's supposed to do in the off season, to where when he checks in, he's in great shape and he passes all of his tests and shows that he's in condition, you know, you can't fake that. When a guy reports for training camp, they run him through conditioning drills. If he does not pass those tests, they know he was faking it or he was not doing what he was supposed to do. It shows up. The technology is there.
Yeah.
They know scientifically if you did or did not do what you were supposed to do.
That you can't cover up.
So if a guy does everything he was supposed to do around the clock, I am more willing to give him leeway on game day, whether or not his emotions spill over. But it is still a case-by-case basis for me.
Well, that's fine, and you can have that viewpoint. I'm just saying that an emotional individual, to me, I don't look at that as an automatic distraction to the team.
Which is what I've just said.
Yeah, no.
Nothing is automatic.
But what I feel as if, from a generic standpoint, when you look at the court of public opinion, somebody who shows emotion on the sideline is not viewed as being a professional. Meaning we view a professional as somebody that understands to keep their emotions in check.
Well, Tom Brady yells
line.
At people all the
well,
time
yeah,
on the Patriots
but
sideline.
Brady, but I think a lot of people would counter, well, Brady's got X amount of Super Bowl rings, so he's given leeway in that department.
Again,
when you're a proven winner, you can go over the boundaries of the lines.
You can give leeway for whatever reason you want to give leeway. In any case.
Yeah, well, of course. I mean, you can make up a bunch of excuses.
So, you know.
But whether somebody won X amount of Super Bowls and somebody won nothing, I don't understand how that has anything to do with the emotions. And you're saying that somebody should have leeway in showcasing their emotions simply because they won X amount of Super Bowls.
No, what I'm saying is that's the public perception.
Yeah, well, I'm not saying you're saying this. I am saying it's the public perception. But I don't think there's enough substance behind the public perception. No, and I completely get that. But it has been a part of the conversation because it's related to Baker Mayfield, too, who's one of the top prospects in this year's draft.
I simply try to adopt the mentality of a head coach. When I look at a player and I determine his value, his worth to a team, if the team can win with him, I try to put myself in the mentality of the coach or the general manager. And I say, okay, what is his production? What value does he bring to the team? How does that equate to what it is that we're committing to him? And how does he fit into the team concept of what we're doing? That's what I'm looking at. I could care less what the headlines say, what the clickbait says,
yeah.
what the fan perception is because the writers have fed them a perception. That's not relevant to me.
Because, like you said, at the end of the day, coaches are looking at it from an X's and O's standpoint. Is the player giving you enough? Is he producing? Or is the emotional nonsense something that needs to overshadow the team? And sometimes the headlines present that the emotional nonsense is overshadowing the team when there's really no reality behind that.
Yeah. I mean, I use the Jeremy Shockey example a lot. Jeremy Shockey was a very productive player for the Giants. But when his mentality became so anti-team concept that he absolutely boiled over and became a total detriment to the team because it was all about him, what he thought and what he wanted, and his actions totally reflected that 100% to where he came to the spring mandatory workout and said he couldn't work out because he didn't feel good and went on the bicycle instead and simply did that to avoid a fine? No, no. Those actions then, that was not permissible. And obviously, he went so far over the line, the Giants felt like they had to trade him.
Well, but there's got to be that substance there before that narrative is worthy of putting forth.
Yeah. Enough of this stuff.
No, and that's the perfect example of that. All right, let's head back to the phone lines. Vincent is in New Jersey. Vincent, what's happening?
Hey, how you doing, guys?
Doing all right, Vincent. What do you got?
I apologize, first of all. I missed the very beginning of the show, but this DRC, cutting the DRC, I'm perplexed as to what the Giants are going to do with corner this year. I mean, even if, and it's a big if, but even if you have Jack Rabbit come back and he's playing the way he played 2 years ago, and even if Eli Apple, his attitude changes and he gets back to where we think he should be, I cannot understand cutting DRC. I understand the money. I understand the finances. We have enough holes on this team. I don't know where or why we've created yet another delta, another area where we're looking and we're saying, okay.
I understand. You know, I understand because in a bubble, Dominic Rogers-Cromartie is still a good NFL corner. In fact, maybe a very good NFL corner. And I think we've spoken. We like him as a player. I liked him in the locker room. And I think it's a shame that he's not here. But I'm going to give you three things to keep in mind. A,
okay.
Ross Cockrell, who I really believe they're going to re-sign. I think he is a quality player and only getting better.
Great.
B, this move is probably part of only a very larger puzzle. Let's wait till Dave Gettleman finishes cooking his soup before we decide to criticize him for any individual ingredient that he's either removed or added to the puzzle piece. Because he clearly has a bunch of things on his plate right now. Let's wait till he's done cooking the whole thing and then tell me how the dinner tastes. All right, that's the second part. Everybody's too quick to give you a knee-jerk reaction. I guarantee you he has a plan to fill that particular spot on this roster with a quality player who's going to fit into Betcher's scheme. There's no way he's going to make this move and leave a gaping hole on this team, knowing that his mandate is to win this season. Why would he do that? He's not. He's got a plan. We just don't know what it is. Number three, there are four rounds of make-it-grade cornerbacks in this draft. So that may be the avenue that he takes to get the guy who at least partially replaces DRC. A lot of corners in this draft. A lot of them.
Well, and connected to that, Vincent, what I was going to add to what Paul just said on that last statement, if you remember, Dave Gettleman let go of Josh Norman after he gave him the franchise tag, and the way that he filled that void was he rebuilt the secondary through the draft. That was the way that he went about his business. Is that a possibility of what his thinking is, that I can find a young corner that could continue to groom and work alongside with Janoris Jenkins and Eli Apple? That could very well be his mindset. It's hard when you don't see the entire puzzle right now. We only got one small piece, which is, yes, DRC's contract was terminated, and I agree with you. Still holds a great deal of value and meant a lot to this team, but we don't know what the finished product is going to look like. When the draft is done and free agency is done, if they bring in two corners, let's say, you know, then you have some options. Right now, I understand your reaction.
Sure.
Because there's a hole there. And,
sure.
and it's a fair reaction. But let's see what the completed finished product is like. Mm-hmm. And then I think we'd have a better idea of what Dave Gettleman's plan is.
I mean, we just started the open legal tampering period for free agency. You got a whole month of this to come. And then you got the draft. And even then, he's not going to be finished. He'll probably be doing things throughout the summer until they get to training camp. And remember, they traded. It wasn't Gettleman. It was Jerry Reese who traded a seventh-round pick for Ross Cockrell the day that the final roster cuts were being made. So, you know, this is an everlasting, continuous process. It's very fluid.
No, you used the perfect word. It's very, very fluid, and I understand, and I agree with everything you said, Paul, and I think that, as you both said, we're looking at the very best at this point, a partial picture. I just think that we've seen so, you know, especially, but in the defensive backfield, so many injuries. And, you know, just to lose a guy who I think is just, is still has some substantial gas in the tank.
Understood. Understood.
Well, you need depth, Vincent. I mean, that's essentially
that's what I'm talking about.
Yeah, and I don't disagree with you.
Understood.
Listen,
understood.
Especially that position, you know. So but I agree with you guys, and I think you got to wait. You got to take a wait and see attitude. But you know, just I can't say I was shocked because you felt like that shoe was going to drop, but you just say, boy, and it's a pretty substantial shoe. I mean, this guy, you know. I know he had the one-game suspension last year. There was so much stuff going on last year. I don't think you can blame DRC or, you know.
Of course not.
I just think that, you know, I agree with you. We got to see what happens. But just right now, as of today, March 12th.
I get it.
It's a big
I get it. It's fair.
Yeah.
It's fair. But let's wait and see and put a little asterisk next to your opinion and have the right to revise it once we find out how the whole thing shakes down in the end. Thank you.
All right,
appreciate
guys.
The phone
Thank
call.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks so much for weighing in. And depth was a big part of what held the Giants back this past season when they were decimated by injuries in the secondary. We were talking about depth. And depth is critical for any team. I say this time and time again. The reason why the Eagles won the Super Bowl this year is because they probably had one of the best depth charts in the National Football League. And they lost a lot of guys at a variety of different positions, but they had a mix of veterans and young guys that filled in admirably. And it was a big reason why they didn't fall off, even though they lost a number of quality players. So you need depth. And if you look on paper, DRC, Janoris Jenkins, Eli Apple, you know, that was the trio at corner. And then Ross Cockrell was that fourth corner. But then once you start losing all of these guys, you realize now who's the fifth guy? Who's the sixth guy? When you have to rely on them, it's understandable there is going to be somewhat of a drop-off in production. So it goes without saying depth is extremely important, especially at that position for the Giants based on what has happened over the last few seasons. It's just if Dave Gettleman brings in a number of players through the draft and free agency, you know, then you're seeing what the Giants are working with. Right now, we have no idea what they're working with. And as far as the suspension, remember, Dave Gettleman wasn't here for any of that. So that goes back to, you know, he's judging DRC for what he sees on film and all of the other factors that are coming into his mind, because he's been around the NFL for quite some time and he's seen DRC on a variety of other teams, so I'm sure he knows the ins and outs of DRC's game, and I'm sure he's had conversations with James Betcher too in terms of the types of players he'll need in his scheme.
I thought Betcher would be able to utilize DRC like he did Honey
I'm with
Badger.
You. Yeah.
I thought it was going to be a great fit, but again, we don't know what the player had in mind for what he wanted.
Correct, or the conversations that were had with the player
out of the upcoming
and
season.
And what they visioned him doing, and him maybe turning around and saying, guys, I'm not that comfortable in doing that. And then that may lead to, well, then what other option do we have?
There
and
you
then
go.
The finances. So, you know, when you don't have those conversations, you're not privy to that, it's hard to also fully understand why the move was made.
Yeah, no question. And the other thing you have to keep in mind, too, and we haven't even brought this up, he is on the other side of 30.
Well, excellent point. And here's the other thing, and this is why it shouldn't be a stunner.
Sometimes the guys on the other side of 30 take a quick drop. I'm not saying he will, because I think he's a heck of an athlete, and I don't think he's lost any of his speed.
Yeah.
But that's got to be part of the equation if you're the GM. It has to be.
When DRC, I don't have the transcript in front of me, but I remember this because I remember hearing it out of his mouth. When everyone was cleaning out their lockers, Paul, and DRC spoke to the media, one of the questions that came up was, you know, even though you do have 1 year left on your deal, you know, what is your thought process about your future with the Giants? And he was up front with the media. He said, listen, I'm on the other side of 30. Getting down to the nitty-gritty of my career, I understand that business decisions are made sometimes. So, you know, he understands the inner workings of how NFL rosters are changed and tweaked, especially with players who are in his position, where they're at the end of their contracts, and like you said, they're in that age bracket where teams sometimes look to move on from them because they want to get younger. So, you know, once again, I think he's been around the NFL long enough that this was not necessarily stunning news, but we just don't know what the conversation was with DRC in terms of the role he would have on this team. And that could have influenced this move as well.
Sure. No doubt.
And I don't think that could be dismissed. So, you know, you can't overlook that. I want to get to Twitter here as
Please
well.
Do.
There's a number of people that are weighing in terms of some of the moves that the Giants made as well as what they could potentially do in terms of free agency. Paul at Pete Contreras 16, he asked this question. He says, why cut DRC? Could the Giants have traded him and at least got a draft pick instead of parting ways with him in terms of terminating his contract? And, you know, who's to say that Gettleman didn't necessarily dangle him out there? And if there's no market and you're dealing with a time frame, sometimes you don't have enough leeway to wait it out to see if a market develops. And, you know, also keep in mind, with free agency starting and teams thinking that there's younger corners that they can easily sign themselves, maybe they don't feel it's worthy of them giving up a resource such as a draft pick.
Especially with a deep cornerback draft.
Well, and that's exactly
he might what actually. I'm saying, yeah. There's a chance, and I don't know that it's going to happen, but unless somebody really wants him and they think he's a difference maker right away for their team, there's a chance that he waits till after the draft to sign with somebody. You know, because there may be some teams out there that say, "Hey, you know what? We'd be thinking about you, but we kind of want to see what we get in the draft.
We
want to
look at our other options,
and then we'll come back and revisit this thing."
Absolutely. We've seen that before.
So, look, whatever. Bottom line is it's done, and that's the end of that story.
A variety of things, I think, can play out here. A.J. Marshall at A.J. Marshall 3. Cornerback, he says, is a high priority the Giants need to address in free agency as well as the draft. He throws out a few names here. Number one, he says, hopefully Ross Cockrell gets re-signed, which you pointed out. And then he also asks your thoughts on former Seahawk cornerback Jeremy Lane, who got cut. You know, Lane was a young prospect who was expected to fill in when the Legion of Boom started to get banged up. And I thought he was an extremely versatile player, but, you know, he fell off a little. The Giants, I don't think there's any crime in them looking into some of these players that may be looking for second chances. I mean, Ross Cockrell, to your point, Paul, I mean, he's a player that he was around the NFL a few times before all of a sudden, you know, the Giants acquired him from Pittsburgh. He was with Tennessee. He had a variety of different roles. He was a special teams player. And then sometimes you get to a team and things all of a sudden click and things register. So, I mean, you could throw out a variety of different cornerback names. And I would say if the Giants feel he's a good fit, if James Betcher likes him, then I don't think there's any harm in them moving forward with trying to pursue somebody like
Just
that.
Just be aware there is some off-the-field baggage with him.
There has been, yeah.
And that always has to be taken into account.
Absolutely, and that's why you have to have conversations with your coaches, what they know. I mean, keep in mind, we're talking about a Seahawk. James Betcher's coming from Arizona. If there's anybody that knows players and personnel in the NFC West, I think it's James Betcher. Now, you can say, well, wait a minute, he's a defensive coordinator. He's focusing more on the offenses. These coaches have been around long enough. I think they can recognize defensive players and offensive players from the conference. So that's something that you also need, I think, to take into consideration. I'm just taking a quick perusal here on Twitter to see if there's anything else that we want to throw out in terms of the conversation. Vic Fontana at NFL NYG 43. He's trying to make a point here about a guard, but Vic, I'm not exactly sure who you're throwing out here because you didn't give us a name. So just bringing up also the fact that there may be some question marks about corner because of Eli Apple's future and what transpired over the last season. But remember, Pat Shurmur was very clear. Eli Apple is getting a fresh slate. He said that. He said that all players are getting a fresh slate. So, you know, anything that happened with the previous regime, I don't think you can assume that baggage, Paul, is carried over to the new coaching staff as well as Dave Gettleman. And Dave Gettleman even said when he spoke to the media that he had a very good sit-down conversation with Eli Apple, and they, you know, expressed both of their sides of what happened last season and then some. And right now it appears, and I say this very carefully, it appears that they're prepared to at least move forward with Eli Apple, who clearly is still under contract as a rookie.
Everything is fluid.
That's the key operating term here on Big Blue Kickoff Live. With that being said, appreciate all the phone calls, appreciate all the tweets, anything we didn't get to on Twitter, we'll try to address off the air. Big Blue Kickoff Live up and running each and every weekday the rest of this week, starting at noon Eastern as we inch closer to the start of the new league. You remember, contracts can't be officially signed until 4 p.m. Eastern this Wednesday. So anything prior to that is just chatter, rumors, speculation. Everything is official 4 p.m. Eastern. With that being said, enjoy the rest of your Monday. For Paul Dottino, I'm Lance Meadow, signing off here on Giants.com. Have a good one.